broadcasting to the world live, if not a little bit late. This is the Gospel Revolution. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's Hump Day, Wednesday, August 12th, 2009. The only August 12th, 2009 in the history of the world. We had a little bit of technical difficulties coming on, but I want to thank Sean O'Halloran for hustling us through and getting us online. And just glad to be with you on this Wednesday night. Glad to have you along for the ride, whether you're listening live. If you are listening live, we want your participation. We'll be giving you the toll-free number, as we always do, momentarily. But plan on joining us. If it's a little after 9 o'clock on the East Coast on Wednesday night and you're listening right now, you're listening live, that's your invitation to join us. And a man who needs no invitation, because he's here, whether it be from Alaska or now back at the home offices of the Gospel Revolution back in Houston, Texas, Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Hey, Glenn. Good evening, my friend.
Good evening.
How
back
in Florida?
It's here. It's not clear, except in some quarters. And it's not
yes,
going anywhere.
Of course. Always. The thing I'm having to get used to is for goodness sake, it's 8 o'clock and it's almost dark here in Houston.
not the case up there in Alaska.
No, I'm not used to the sun setting until 10:30 and then it's staying bright until 1:30. And then it starts getting light at 3:30 and the sun comes up at 5:30. So, yeah, this is just, this is darkness.
Well, you got in this morning, right?
Excuse me?
You got in this morning from Alaska?
I did. I flew out of the bright sunshine at about 9:30 yesterday evening from Alaska and got to see the beautiful landscape of the land I was leaving and flying over the glaciers and everything to leave. Nothing like the up close and personal encounter that I had with the glaciers while I was there, but enough to say goodbye on my way out. And needless to say, I fell in love with Alaska while I was there. What an amazing, amazing place, no doubt. And the people of Alaska, goodness. My friends there, Scott Johnson and Megan, and oh goodness, Jason, and so many wonderful people that we had the pleasure of meeting. I actually Jason is the one who ran the bed and breakfast where I stay. And I tell you, you talk about an impressive human being. That was to watch someone have wisdom, and it was just really a beautiful, beautiful thing. I'll probably tell some stories about him in the future that will be pertinent to a lot of things. But yes, it was a magnificent trip, and can't wait to go back.
Well, give us a little bit of clue what you're talking about as far as that is concerned with Jason.
As far as Jason is concerned?
Yeah, as far as what wisdom are you referring to?
Well, I mean, you know, and this is only one story, okay. This is my first Jason story, okay. And Jason is a gentleman in his, somewhere in his 40s, and he owns a home there, and he's converting it to a bed and breakfast in the process. So, a lot of the chats that we had, one of them was he told me about his next door neighbor, and next door neighbor Jason built a rock wall for his drive between his neighbor's property and his own. And so after he finished it, the next door neighbor come over and just grumbling and griping, "That rock wall, that blank, blank, blank rock wall's on my property. What are you building a rock wall on my property for?" And blah, blah, blah. And so Jason says to him, well, tell me, when's your birthday? So right in the middle of this, man, and I can just see Jason standing there with a smile on his face. He says, when's your birthday? And he said, mine is December, my birthday. And he said, well, my birthday is December 19th. And that's when he found out. He said, oh, mine's the 18th. And they asked about the year, so they were both born the same year. And then he found out that they were both born in the same hospital, so most likely were laying next to each other in in the hospital in Anchorage, especially with as low population as they had back at that time. But anyway, he said, well, what'd you ask me for at my birthday? He said, well, he said, I want to give you an early birthday present. And he said, what? And he said, I want to give you that rock wall. And he said, now you can tear it down or whatever you'd like, but he said, I think it's kind of pretty, but he said, I just want to give it to you. He says, you can do with it whatever you want. And it just blew me away when I was sitting here listening to this story. It's like, you know, that needs to be in the Bible or something. You know?
That's Solomon-esque.
Yes, it is, very much so. And the guy, you know, just his whole demeanor changed, and Jason told me that they have just been best friends ever since then, and the guy is very proud of his rock wall. So.
You know what my birthday is, right?
Tell me again.
December 19th.
December 19th? Oh, well, I was thinking December, but that's right. So you see, that all of that wisdom just kind of comes around with that part of that time of year, I suppose.
So what's the guy doing?
Very easily be the same year too as Jason. That would be very close, if no cigar. It could, but I doubt you were in the same hospital.
I was at White's Memorial in Chicago.
Yeah, I don't think that's another cold place for sure in December, but not quite the same as Alaska.
Not as dark. Well, we're not bringing darkness tonight to you, ladies and gentlemen. We're bringing the light, and we want you to participate at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260 for any questions, comments, insight that you might have. We want to hear from you tonight. 1-800-436-3260, or if you're listening on the archive, or even if you're listening live, you can always email us your questions or comments at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. And we really encourage you to get on the phone and give us a call. Want to hear from you tonight. 1-800-436-3260. So I know you had this wonderful cruise and saw the glaciers and all that, but you were telling me this afternoon about a couple that you met. And why don't you retell the story? I think the people will be blessed to hear how the gospel impacted people in Alaska.
Oh, yes. Oh, what a wonderful thing. On this particular cruise, I mean, you wind up sitting at a window table where you're going to also enjoy your dinner that comes with the cruise. And through Prince William Sound and to 26 different glaciers is just amazing. But anyway, we wind up sitting with this couple, and you know, they're kind of lovey. He's paying a lot of attention to her and just being really sweet, and they seemed like they were really in love. So we started talking and. Just chit-chatting on the surface, and you could tell it's kind of, you know, like, you know, some walls, some barriers up there, you know, and they later said to me and Chris, my friend Chris went with me from Chicago, and everybody knows Chris has been a real dear friend of mine for 15 years, and he flew in from Chicago, and so we were on this cruise at the same time. And we just have a great time talking to people, and we kind of play off each other, you know, when we're talking. And so after we had, they, and then the course, the questions always come, well, what do you do for a living? What do you do for a living? And I always dread that because I want to continue having fun, and the stereotype with somebody in the ministry, of course, so many years, I just avoided it. And said, you know, I am a motivational speaker. So I just, and then from there, though, it doesn't lead to any conversation that is, you know, relating to my work and what I do. So I've tried to come up with this little short thing that says, you know, well, I started out in the ministry, and then, you know, my mind changed a great deal about Christianity, and I'm still a teacher, and I still do the same thing, but not necessarily in a religious setting or in a church setting. Blump, that's pretty much it. And so there was, you know, a bit of raised eyebrows and oh, okay, and then a hurried change of the conversation, which was fine with me. And we had gotten through a couple of hours of that cruise, and finally the young girl that was with her, I guess her fiancé, I don't know if they're planning on getting married or not, but they were definitely making plans of life together. And she said, okay, so what do you believe about this? And it was something about, actually about the where we were and about creation and... And then, well, what do you believe about the end of the world then? And so that question led to something else. And but as it turns out, as the conversation kept going, the responses that I was giving was leading her to divulge more and more about herself. And because it was ringing true with her, something was resonating in her heart about what I was saying. And that's when I found out that she came from a very abusive Christian background. You know, a father that sang in church and came home and beat the kids type thing. And so she, you know, she wound up with this extreme view of people, of life, and everything. And so without divulging, you know, a lot of the conversation, which really surprised me that it got really quite personal, and but it was like she saw an opportunity to get some answers, and she was not going to let that pass by. And so anyway, we continued talking, and by the time that cruise was over, it was really funny because at one point she said, you know, she says, I have to tell you that we really don't like people. And so when you guys came and sat down, we really didn't like what was going on. And so then Chris spoke up and says, oh, that's great. We don't like people either. So from there, it's just, you know, kind of, and then, of course, they begin to explain, no, it's not that we don't like people and blah, blah, blah. It's funny how, you know, people, you know, have to kind of crawl out of their shell sometimes from being protected. And so, but by the time we got through the cruise, without going into great detail, we were walking off of that ship, Glenn, and she turned around and looked at me, and she said, she asked me a question. She said, so, we were talking about perspective and things like that, and about the reality of everybody being righteous and holy in God's eyes. And she said, that's so not the way I see the world. And then she mentioned that she has this belief that everybody is going to abandon her, forsake her, and hurt her. And so right there in front of her fiancé, as we were getting ready to leave, we were the last people off the ship, and she turned around and looked at me as she was standing close to him. She said, so if my perspective changes, she said, do you think that I can actually believe that, and she called him by name, which I'm not going to, and she called him by name, and she said, do you think that I will be able to believe that he will not abandon me or forsake me or hurt me? And I thought for a moment. I said, no, able to, but the greater thing is not that you believe that he is not going to hurt you. It's that you believe that you're going to be all right, and you're going to be healthy, and you're going to be emotionally stable regardless of what he does. And to which he and she both just, it kind of took them aback, you know. And so we're walking out, and they want pictures. How long was the cruise for? How long?
Yeah.
It lasted about 5 hours.
So this was just a few hours together.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and as far as truly talking, probably about an hour. It was, before that, it was just kind of maybe 2 hours of actual talking about stuff that was important to her when she said, let me ask you something. So in about 2 hours. So when we got off, this girl who said she really hated people, she was hugging us, and we were hugging them, and they both said, we don't want to leave. We don't want to leave you. and to Chris both, and of course Chris was sharing his experience with the gospel, 15 years ago when he came to my living room, and he said, what happened to me 15 years ago is happening to you right now. So after we got off the ship, she turned around and she said, well, she says, I have to tell you something. And I said, what's that? And she said, I think you may have changed my life forever today. And said, thank you.
Well, that's fantastic. We do have a caller online, and I want to get to our caller, but I've got to ask you, what do you think, Michael, was the pivotal thing that you shared that had such a dramatic impact?
Well, it's hard to say, but I think that her terminal view of the planet between Al Gore and the church, she just has such a terminal view of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me what my view was. I said, I think the Earth recycles itself, and whatever damage we've done, it's going to repair itself, and God's not going to destroy the planet, and I don't think anything exists right now that we have the ability to destroy the planet. So I think we've got, an awful lot of years ahead, and possibly no end in sight. So it was just ending that terminal mentality. And you know how many times we've talked, Glenn, about how distorting mentally and emotionally that terminal planet mentality is. So I think that was the main thing. So when I left them, it was funny because I challenged them. The very first time I taught the Redemption of the World, I challenged the crowd to take 1 week and pretend that everybody they saw was righteous and holy and perfect. So she said, okay, I think I can do that. And then Chris chimed in and he said, and especially yourself. And that's when her fiance said, wow, so that's asking a lot. So it was just beautiful. I mean, it was just like this wonderful, and we've been in contact with each other since then, they're now wanting to plan their vacations with me and Chris, So.
And they're from Texas, right?
They're from Austin, Texas, so we're planning on getting together at some point. He's a chiropractor, so Chris kept telling him how much that he was charging for my services. He kept raising it every time she said that her life was being changed. He said, okay, it's $250 now.
Well, somebody that can very much appreciate your being so enthralled with Alaska and the beauty of the landscape there is online with us from another northern state in the great state of Wisconsin, our Wisconsin correspondent, Pep Washburn. Pep!
Glenn! Mike!
Pepperoni!
It's good to be online again. It's been quite a while.
Yeah, well,
you
thanks
doing,
for
sir?
Calling. You've been to Alaska, haven't you?
I looked across the strait at Prince Rupert, British Columbia, at Alaska, but I've never touched it.
Now, this sounds like a Sarah Palin story. It's like Russia's just crossed the way there.
That was her foreign policy experience.
Yes, well, I could see Russia from my home or something. Yeah. Hey, I've
how
called in to challenge you.
How many states
on,
have you been to, Pat?
What's that?
How many? You travel a lot. How many states have you been to?
All but two. Alaska and South Carolina, I have not been to.
Alaska and South Carolina. Well,
right.
You know, Alaska was my last one, so, yeah, believe me, you've got a treat coming up.
You've
so what did you call
more.
In for?
Pardon me?
I said, what did you call in for?
Oh, I'm calling in because last week Glenn made a comment that I have been turning over in my head, and so bear with me a little bit. I want to just share some thoughts. I'll give you the comment and share some thoughts on it, and then see what you two have to say about this in a little more detail. Last week's webcast, and Michael, I don't know if you're in agreement with this or not, but this is what I want to kind of find out. Glenn made the comment, religion is the number one reason for evil in the world. And it seems to me that religion is more of a mixed bag of good and evil, pun intended. And I think it's too simplistic to categorize it just as strict. I mean, there's aspects of some religions that promote beneficial things in the world, you know, hospitals, social programs, etc. And, of course, when we use the word evil, we've got to give it a definition. And so I thought about that today, and I thought that we've also almost got to have a general characterization of evil as being like anything that's human-induced, that brings about kind of an unnecessary suffering and destruction in the world. And so if it's true, as you assert, that religion is the number one reason for evil in the world, how do you explain, say, China's Cultural Revolution, where 7 million people were estimated to have been brought to a premature death? I mean, that was took place in an supposed atheistic country, and that was for political reasons. And you know, the Russian Civil War, 17 to 22 or something like that, 9 million people died, and that was political reasons. Stalin's reign, they estimate that over 20 million people died, and that was an ethnic, political cause, you know. And again, in another atheistic, foisted on the world by people of atheistic orientation. You know,
but
these are supposedly these atheistic societies purged of religion, yet clearly evil reigned in those events. So what was the source of that evil?
Well, let me
correct Pep for a little bit, Michael, first before I get your comments. My comment was that it's not the number one reason, but the number one vehicle for evil.
Oh, well, I can go back and download. You go back and you download it. You use the word reason.
Really? I always
but maybe
say
it was a misstatement. But anyway, go ahead.
I always say vehicle.
That's right.
When I assert that. But, Michael, before we get your comments, I think you mentioned Al Gore as far as the whole concept of global warming and the destruction of the planet. Because of primarily carbon dioxide emissions as being a religious mindset. I would argue that the communist mindset, even though it's purportedly atheistic, is religious in its context. And because it purports that this is the best way of existing and dominating controlling other people's lives. But even with those examples that you gave, Pep, those pale in comparison to the examples of religious genocide and people of so-called faith who have slaughtered hundreds of millions of people in the name of Christ, in the name of Allah, in the name of Jehovah over the centuries. But what are your thoughts, Michael?
Well, I think that that the totality of your question, Pep, is then what are we defining as religion? Religion to me is self-righteousness, and just because you purge religion does not mean you have purged the essence of religion, which is self-righteousness. Which is obvious that if someone feels they have the right to terminate somebody else's life, they feel superior to those people. Mm-hmm. And the atmosphere of superiority is the atmosphere of religion. Or the atmosphere of inferiority is the atmosphere of religion. Someone can say they do not believe in God, yet be very, very, very religious in their way of thinking. So the default is this, and I believe this with all my heart, and I think you do too, Pep. The default is that we are all born righteous and holy before God. I also believe, and this is interesting because I mentioned the name Megan, one of the friends that we met up there, a beautiful young girl, and she was just, as we've talked about this, she was just shocked. And she said, so what is the big difference that you teach? And I said, well, it's basically that when we are born into this world, that we are born righteous and holy and perfect in the eyes of God. And she says, but I've never been taught religion, and I believe that. And I said, thank you very much, because I believe that without the influence of religion, that is intuitive knowledge.
Yes.
That we are loved and accepted. And she said she's always believed in God, but she never had any negative connotation about God. And she always believed that God saw her as perfect. And that was just so amazing to me, because here I had at least an example of this belief that I have, that everyone is born holy and righteous and perfect, and we get that educated out of us. So, here's the thing. For someone to be able to commit the genocides that you have mentioned in the name of a political agenda, they have had to have the understanding of their perfection and righteousness and that of the world educated out of them. To have that educated out of you takes the inducement of some religious concept that makes you either superior or inferior to someone else. So I would still, even with Glenn's uncorrected statement that he first made, I still would agree with his original statement. And I agree, number one, with the statement, regardless of whether that it is political or whatever, because I believe in two things. I believe in this default: everyone is righteous and holy and perfect before God, and that the only way that we lose that is to have religion of some kind to take that out of us. Whatever it is, however it is that it is taken away from us, and that the gospel is the one thing that reinforces that. And because of those two things, and I do because my view and hope of the world and its future is that these type of situations are the things that, as we get better at this, and you've heard Glenn and I both make the comments that I believe we're getting better at this, because I do believe we're getting better at this, and that we're having at least in where that there's more positive things about God being understood, we're having less and less of a cruel planet to deal with. So my long-term hope is also invested in this belief in the gospel, because I believe it will change even those situations that the outcome or even the inception of those situations, which you mentioned from our history, that seem to be strictly just politically motivated.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So, really, the I guess what this is boiling down to is the use of the word religion connotates some can be misunderstood. So, how would we phrase that instead of saying, you know, religion is the number one vehicle for reason for evil in the world? What could we substitute for the word religion that would not be misinterpreted?
Well, I don't think we should. I think that we should be the ones who are defining what religion is. See, it's the very same thing, very same complication that we have, just like salvation, all right? Because everybody has misunderstood that term, do we change the term?
Huh?
But, see, we haven't changed the term. Our goal is to re-educate people as to what salvation actually means as compared to redemption. And you see the success that that brings in helping people begin to mentally and logically calculate those differences and therefore bring about understanding. See, rather than us picking a different word other than religion, let's use the one that everybody uses, but use it to be able to bring contrast between what religion is and what the gospel is.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that the only thing that is beneficial as far as a belief system is the gospel, and I think that everything else is deadly in some form. I mean, it may just kill your dreams, but it may lead to abuse of self. But religion is always going to lead to the abuse of oneself or the abuse of others.
Earlier you used the phrase in connection with the religious mind as like the self-righteous mind.
Yes.
Or if I could add my own, like a self-protective mentality, self-promoting mentality. And that's almost synonymous with psychological term ego. And
yes.
that portion of us that has been created that we think is us, but it's really not us, and of course, the ego is always attempting to preserve, promote itself, and at the expense of other people.
I've never really stopped to think about that particular term, ego, being that in particular, so I can't really comment.
Yeah.
But
what you're describing is like a psychotic relationship within human beings, or I mean, I guess maybe what I'm describing, you know, the heart-mind sickness, if you will. That
yes, and I would agree with your assessment, and it is a mind sickness,
yeah.
And can lead to a heart sickness if not stopped. Because you remember when we first got involved in the religions that you and I and Glenn were involved in,
uh-huh.
It was simply a mind sickness. We didn't know it was going to lead to a heart sickness.
Yeah.
I mean, we were excited. There was nothing wrong with our heart.
Yeah.
Man, we had the answers, and we had we had this thing that had infected our minds, but it took years to find out that it wasn't good for our heart. It infected our heart later on.
Yeah. Well,
and don't forget that self-righteousness is not just the promoting of self. It's also when, like the woman, Michael, that you met on the cruise in Alaska, it's when one sees oneself as less than other people as well.
Oh, yes, yes. Any judgment of the self.
That sees oneself either greater or lesser than everybody else.
And
see, I think everyone should promote themselves. But you see, we don't have to promote ourselves at the expense of others, just like what you were talking about where ego is concerned. But see, that it is not necessary to have to put somebody down to promote myself. I think every person who is successful in business, who's successful at anything in life, you have to promote yourself. But you don't have to subjugate other people to your promoting of yourself. It's okay to speak up for yourself. In fact, it is highly recommended to speak up for yourself. It is highly recommended to promote your ideas, which is self. It's highly recommended to promote yourself financially, which is highly recommended and beneficial, not just for yourself but for others. But see, all of those things, the other ingredient that is not necessary is to do it at the expense of others.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
You're very welcome. Cafe.
I've been bouncing that thing around in my head all day.
Well, good. This is where those things that buzz around in your head get to come out on the Worldwide Webcast.
Well, thank you very much. I'll say goodbye now.
Thanks, right, Pep. And we've got some other contributions from Pep online by email that we may get to tonight. There's some really good stuff. And always happy to have you aboard, Pepe.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Pep.
It's Pep Washburn from Wisconsin, and now the line is open for you at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran waiting in the studio to take your call. 1-800-436-3260. That's a good addition to the effort. Hey, Michael?
Absolutely.
But we do have about 20 minutes left to go in this edition of Glenn Klein Online, and we want your participation at 1-800-436-3260, or as always, you can email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That's webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Ironically, Michael, we got this email from Ken Kemp, and Ken says, "Hi, Mike and Glenn. Have you guys seen the movie Religious? I watched it the other day and quite enjoyed it. Bill Maher really has some good points, and it's really funny. One thing he said was that Jesus' story was not original. This is news to me," he says, Ken says. "He talked about ancient gods 1,000 years ago before Christ that did many of the same things that Christ did. If you guys watched the movie, I did a quick research about the Persian god Horus, Mithra, and Krishna, but did not see much. Have you any info on if his info is correct? If you have seen the show, I would love to hear your comments about it." And he says, "I would love to hear Bill Maher interview Mike. It would be very interesting. Thanks, guys, and have a nice evening." Have you seen Religious yet?
I haven't. I've wanted to. It's on my Netflix, though, and on my Netflix lineup. So, I've heard this. In fact, Carlton has made those same comments that Jesus wasn't the first, and the idea of a sacrifice wasn't the first, and the idea of a virgin birth wasn't the first. But, you know, you made the comment when that came up, Glenn, which I thought was very accurate and logical and sensible. And that was that you said, if I can quote you right, that you weren't surprised that with prophecies being out there that this was going to happen, that others would. You know, we know that many people attempted to be the Christ because of the prophecies, and which which had been around for a couple of thousand years. It certainly doesn't surprise me that others have. It doesn't surprise me that the human need for resolving this through sacrifice was in their minds from the beginning, for sure. I mean, we go all the way back to Cain and Abel, and the whole thing there was that one's sacrifice was accepted and one was rejected. So these comparisons to the work of Jesus are tremendously unimpressive to me. I think they are overblown. I think if you actually, it would kind of be like the Nostradamus prophecies.
Right.
If you actually looked at them instead of had them translated for you by someone as to what they said, you'd see there really wasn't anything there in the first place. But so is the same of some of these other historical things. And I agree with you 100%. Just because others had an idea of a virgin birth, others had an idea of these things, doesn't disqualify the real thing. I mean, so if there was and they did these things, where is its impact on the planet? Where's the impact of these other self-proclaimed virgin births or these self-proclaimed sacrifices for sin? Where's their reality anywhere on the planet? But the fact that I understand where Bill Maurer is coming from, and it's kind of like the very same issue with climate change. We all know the climate has changed, but what's causing it? Scientists do disagree on that, and even though Al Gore's response when he was before the Senate subcommittee on that, and they said, well, other scientists believe have other information, and his response was, and others also believe that the launch to the trip to the moon was on the backstage backlot of Universal Studios too, and they let it die at that. They didn't press him with his other scientific debate, because there is debate out there that is not allowed to surface. So it's easy once you become persuaded of a point to just gather everything in a basket and shove it off to the side because of your point of view. And I'm not talking about others, I'm talking about myself also. It's just what you do when you become persuaded that something is a certain way. But then it takes someone who has the reason about them to question those things directly instead of accepting them unequivocally and without validation of those things.
Right. And we also have the scriptures, which, of course, is not the entire Bible, but is the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, according to Jesus himself and the disciples, that foretell the redemption of the world and the coming of Messiah and the salvation of the world. I don't know that any of these other religions have that contextual validation, if you will.
The foretelling of such a thing.
But it is an interesting sidebar. We got this email from Jeff Robertson just now. He said, George Carlson said that religion is the biggest cause of mental illness.
Yes.
And he says, anything that separates us from the rest of the human race, like Mike said, we are superior, we are saved, we have the better way, and we see others as either part of our way or a group, starts the judgment process and the mentally ill state of self-righteousness.
Yes.
And he says, all love, Jeff Robertson.
And all who become convinced that they are not saved and not part of, it is just as great of mental illness as those who embrace it.
This is Glenn Klein Online. That's Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution. We still have around 10 minutes or so to get you in, plenty of time. If you're listening live and it's about 10 to 9 o'clock or 10 to 10 on the East Coast of the United States on Wednesday night, you're listening live and your participation is requested at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. So we got this email from Pep earlier about the time just prior to the Iraqi war, and it ties in nicely with our earlier discussion of the end times. It's from the website the truthout.org, and it's an interview that this guy did. His name is Eric Mandonet. Original article was in L'Express in France. And it says that Jacques Chirac had learned, this is an extract from it. Jacques Chirac, who of course was the president at the time of the start of the Iraqi war, had learned the previous month, straight from George W. Bush's mouth, that a revelation received with surprise, first of all, then after he had formed himself about the matter with dread. During that telephone conversation, aimed at convincing his French counterpart to join the coalition, George W. Bush used an extraordinary argument, asserting that, quote, Gog and Magog are at work in the Middle East, and that the biblical prophecies are about to be fulfilled. At the time, Jacques Chirac, stupefied, did not react. He knew Bush was religious, but he had trouble understanding that the president of the world's premier power could be so dissolved in scripture that he would summon the duet of Gog and Magog to justify his battle. Chirac talked about it with his advisors, whose first reaction was to smile. He charged them with finding out more specifically about Gog and Magog. One day later, a recidivist, George Bush, pronounced these two mysterious names during a press conference on, quote, the axis of evil, unquote. Then LSA urgently consulted a specialist, not in France but in Switzerland, to avoid possible leaks. Thomas Romer, professor of theology at the University of Lausanne, was roped in. His report was enough to make your blood freeze. Gog, prince of Magog, is in the apocalypse. This character appears in Genesis and, above all, in two obscure chapters of the book of Ezekiel, in a prophecy of global army engaging in the final battle in Israel, a conflict desired by God, who must have thrown down Gog and Magog, utterly annihilate the enemies of the chosen people for all time before a new world may be born. For a French mind, the evocation of Gog and Magog could be laughable. Chirac, however, was not laughing. This parable of a heralded apocalypse in order to realize a prophecy worried and tormented him. He also wondered about religious ignorance at a time when religious foundations of political and military decisions are far more determinant than people want to believe. From then on, Jacques Chirac understood what was happening. The American president had summarily decrypted the scriptures. A global fundamentalist Islamic army was threatening the Western world, which supports Israel. The September 11th attacks against the Manhattan Towers were the proof. And this is from Chirac. They're going to put the region to fire and blood. They understand nothing about anything and are crassly ignorant about an already complicated East. Ask one of them to cite you the names of a single Arab poet. For them, it's though the confrontation between the Shia and the Sunni were some Middle Eastern Super Bowl finale. And he'd enumerate all that was to happen. You'll see they're going to lead a Pandora's war. Win it quickly, but then the hard part will begin. Sunni and Shia will tear each other apart. After the invasion, a civil war will take more civilian victims in the Battle of the Lightning War. Al-Qaeda will find ground for maneuvering in Iraq that has been interdicted to it up until now. And in 3 years, when 3,000 GIs will be dead, their sole choice will be between withdrawal and dispatch of new troops. That was Jacques Chirac's prediction based on his experience. We've often heard, and Bill Maher has been one of the greatest critics of George Bush's policy based on Bush's religious underpinnings. But that is chilling, to say the least, Michael, that here the President of the United States Riyadh were working in the Middle East prior to the Iraqi war.
Yeah. What's the, gosh, you know, what do you say to that? You know, it was the I think everyone saw it who were willing to see it anyway. Who were not of a particular bias to be blinded to it. I actually was of a particular bias to have been blinded to it, but I saw it, you know. And goodness, yeah, it is frightening to see that the determination of future is based on a prophecy that's already been fulfilled. Just that one thing, all of these things about the gospel are so very important, and there's not a place that we can turn, Glenn, not to the point to the validity of the importance of the gospel, which declares that all things have been fulfilled. All the way from my newfound friend up in the Prince William Sound on the cruise, whose life was filled with negativity because of this doomsday mentality, to someone who is invoking a war because of doomsday mentality. It is frightening, definitely, definitely frightening, and consequences that will last for so many generations, you know. And until, you know, the impressions of the gospel begin to take effect in a more global sense, I mean, this is what we're stuck with, is this type of mentality.
Well, this is nothing new. I mean, Harry Truman, when he unleashed the atomic bombs against Japan, felt that this was the start of the beginning of the end, and saw a thermonuclear war as the apocalypse. Ronald Reagan was famously impressed and influenced by end times doctrine and thought they were in the end times. Here's George W. Bush, and I wonder even some of the fervency that we're seeing at these town hall meetings all over the United States right now against the healthcare reform is bubbling over to some very angry citizens, many of which are conservative Christians. And I'm wondering, Michael, if this is just people's frustration in the fact that this thing hasn't moved along faster, and that they see what's happening now as some of the fulfillment of the so-called New World Order and some of those things that they've been taught for so long that they should be standing up against, as Barack Obama seems to be having a larger world view than certainly guys like Reagan and Bush had vis-a-vis their own religious underpinnings.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you know, if you listen, the questions for the most part aren't even about healthcare from the...
Well, they certainly go, once they get done with the healthcare, they make claims about Americans losing their freedom and they wanting to take their country back. And of course, this has been something that the Christian mega ministries have said, we want to take our country back for God. We want to go back to the, you know, original Christian foundation of the country, when it wasn't a Christian foundation at all. It was a gospel foundation. Much
absolutely
different distinction.
And then there's people who truly just do not agree with Obama's policies, but they don't realize that the collusion with some of this anger has nothing to do with people who are against his policies. They're against him. They're against him because they believe he's the Antichrist. They're against him because they believe he's ushering in, which is really funny that they would be angry with him if it is supposed to be fulfilling Bible prophecy. But anger is from the religion, from the deep core of the religion, and I, and it's going to be hard for people to separate their disagreement, those who just simply disagree with Obama's policies, and to stay away from the from this dangerously angry group, which has nothing to do with his policies. It has to do with the fact that they want this nation under the control of Christianity. That's it. And they see Obama as the absolute, the epitome of just the opposite of the church being in control of the country. Even though they gained nothing under George Bush, or anyone who has used their participation to gain power, which I have to say, our participation, because I certainly was a part of that for many years. But I, you know, there's going to be some interesting things coming up in the next couple of years. I think, and again, I am an eternal optimist for sure. And my real hope is that the that the Republican Party will be able to shed itself of its ball and chain of the religious right. The Republican Party is a it's a great thing. I have nothing but admiration. You know, my I mean, the name Democrat in my household growing up was not. I mean, my dad was one of those. You might as well said communist. You know, he was all the way back to that. But I think some new dynamics are coming around. I'm thinking whether or not I should prophesy here for a moment. I think the obvious is, I think the obvious is that the religious right realizes they've been screwed over by Republicans and Democrats to gaining their goals. I think that it is better than a 50% chance that Sarah Palin will offer the religious right a whole new party to join. And, because she truly does embody what their views are. If she were elected, she would not just represent a Republican point of view politically, but she would absolutely enforce a Christian agenda upon this country. That's my view. And hopefully, she will help separate the religious right from the Republican Party, and we can get back to a good two-party system again in this country and find out once again what a Republican really is and find out what a Democrat really is, rather than it being divided over this pro-God, anti-God, pro-abortion, anti-abortion, pro-gay, anti-gay situations. Everybody who stands on those situations one way or the other, and it's what motivates them to vote one way or the other, most all of them who are motivated by those issues have no idea what a Republican or a Democrat is.
You heard it here first, folks, that Sarah Palin is going to start her own political party. And that will be interesting to see if that happens. Well, we're just about at the end of this webcast. A couple of points to make is that, Michael, you are back on your way to Indiana this weekend.
I am there.
By Grant Miller. And yes. If you folks want to participate in those meetings, how far away are you from Indianapolis?
I'm about west, did I tell you the name of the town was? Anyway, it's about 2 hours north. And also, I have to mention this, Glenn, before we go. We were speaking about promoting oneself as long as it wasn't at the detriment of someone else was quite all
right. Right.
I've been doing a lot of self-promotion about my birthday.
Right.
I've been doing it shamelessly, and I will turn the next year up. I'll get my next year comes up this coming Sunday, and it's paid off. I'm sitting here right now with three really good friends from Canada, having sent me personal checks for my birthday, and that was Lee Dyke and Dee Simpson. And also Phyllis Schultz all sent me two beautiful birthday cards, and so they have succumbed to my shameless promotion, and I know that they just love me and they wanted to say something for my birthday, and I got two really beautiful cards from these beautiful ladies, and I appreciate it so much.
Well,
so keep the cards and letters coming. You still got time.
Yeah, hopefully the Millers will have a nice birthday cake for you on Sunday. If you're interested in those meetings, folks, just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com, and we'll put you in touch with Grant Miller and get you directions. If you're anywhere in the upper Midwest and want to head on over for those meetings this weekend, just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. And we will put you in touch with the people who are hosting Michael, and you can go and join in on those.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you. It's a wonderful group, and people who are freshly into the gospel out of the German Baptist persuasion. So these folks were, you know, they dressed in Mennonite-type garb, and they have been set free.
They used to dress in Mennonite-type garb, right?
Yes, they were in that deep of religion. So, and but now they are they're free and enjoying that freedom for sure.
Well, we're enjoying our freedom tonight. We want to thank Sean O'Halloran for getting us online. Even if it was a couple minutes late, want to thank Pep Washburn from Wisconsin for joining in, and our emails. You okay?
Yes, excuse me for coughing on you.
Well, have a wonderful time in the Hoosier land.
I will. Thank you, Glenn, and you have a good week.
All right. We'll talk to you soon, folks. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody.